Thank you, Brother Edmund. I think that before we begin our thoughts today, I would like to tell you that you are often in our thoughts and prayers. We are very glad to be with you, and especially I was glad that Sister Sharon could join me this weekend. We've enjoyed our fellowship, particularly yesterday and Friday evening. We would like to bring you the love and greetings from our class in Portland. And they asked if I would bring a text to you found in 1 John 4:16. And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love, and he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him. A few of the friends especially, after hearing that we were coming, came to us and asked if their love would be given to you. Brother Peter and Sister Margaret Furlajewski are living in Portland now, and they wanted their love given to you. And, of course, Sister Stella Hack is living at the retirement center and wished her love conveyed. She's been on the road and in the air quite a bit lately, so we see her sometimes. But she's a blessed addition to the area. Though our thoughts this morning may address somewhat some events in history, we would like on the outset to say that our focus, we wish not to be so much the details of history of Israel and Jerusalem as the lessons of history. It seems that we, the details of events and sequences and people's names escape us. But we should be trying to learn the lessons and remembering the lessons of these events particularly. And locate our switches here. The history of Jerusalem has been a record of its sieges. No fewer than 27 have been recorded, and more if those of modern times are counted. Some show Israel's strength of faith, and others their lack of faith. But all have marked God's special providences to them. This city is called the City of God in Psalms 46, 4 and Psalms 87, 3. It is called the Holy City in Nehemiah 11, 1 and Isaiah 48, 2 and Isaiah 52, 1. In its earliest references, it was noted as the home of Melchizedek, king of Salem, Genesis 14, 18. It then became a royal city of the Canaanites, Joshua 10, 1 and verse 5, and Joshua 15, 8. Afterwards, from the time of David onward, it was the royal city of the house of David. The name Jerusalem has a compound meaning, signifying either possession of peace, dwelling of peace, or foundations of peace, referring to the chief hills or mountains on which the city was built. The upper part of the city was called Moriah. The Temple Mount here. The sides and the lower part was called Zion, or the City of David. The sides of Zion descended steeply on the west and south into the valley of Hinnom, and on the east into the Teropion, which separated it from Moriah. On the north, a broad valley swept around it. Here you can see two of the valley systems to the right and the left, and Jerusalem on the highland. It was a natural place of strength, and not strange that the Jebusites glorified in its strength. They seemed, these Jebusites, to be descended from Ham through Canaan, Genesis 10:16. In Joshua 10, 1 through 6, King Adonizedek, king of the Jebusites, king of Jerusalem, is mentioned as entering into alliances with other kings against Joshua. Joshua 10, 8 through 10. In fact, there were five cities that came to take siege against Gibeon here in the north. The Gibeonites appealed to Joshua, who was at Gilgal, for help. They claimed, the Gibeonites, that they were men from some far country and dressed in old rags and clothes, when they sent their emissaries to Joshua and said that we need help. Or they actually, before they even appealed for help, they executed a contract or an agreement with Joshua for help in time of need. And later it was only revealed that they were local peoples here in Gibeon. And at the time of this siege, from all these cities, they then appealed to Joshua. Joshua came to help them and only found that they were then the ones that he had been somewhat deceived with, but he honored his agreement with them and drove off the Canaanites. We'd like to read this account in Joshua 10, 8 through 10. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly and went up from Gilgal all night. And the Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon. We here have a picture of a scene at Gibeon. And chased them along the way that goeth up to Beth Horon and smote them to Azekah and unto Makeda. Some more portions of this account is found in Joshua 12, 7 through 24. After the death of Joshua, when there remained much for Israel yet to conquer in Canaan, the Lord directed Judah to fight against the Canaanites. They took Jerusalem, smote it with the sword, and set it on fire. Judges 1, 1 and 2, and verses 8 through 9. Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them? And the Lord said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword, and the city was set on fire. And afterward the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountain and in the south and in the valley. This was probably, however, not a complete eviction of the Canaanites in the land, nor a complete eviction even of the Jebusites in the area of Jerusalem. Or it may have been some lack of vigilance on their part that allowed for these Jebusites to later return and occupy the city. For it was again entrenched with Jebusites later in the time of David. This lack of total eviction proved to be a constant vexing for all the years of their nationhood, Numbers 33, 55 to 56. And if ye will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Moreover, it shall come to pass that I will do unto you as I thought to do unto them. And so it was that we find, even in the time of Elijah, that this tolerance had infected the land and still had to be dealt with. And so, dear brethren, we would say, I think that we've missed a slide here. Something seems to be out of order. Let me just catch up to where I thought we were. And we'll go back. Excuse me for the interruption. Something seems to be out of sequence slightly. We would remind ourselves, however, of the lesson that if there are Canaanites in our own breast that we have not driven out, that we should renew our own vigilance and remember the words of Joshua 1:9. Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Joshua was vigilant. Those that came after him lacked some of the vision to drive out the Canaanites. We need to maintain the vision to drive out the Canaanites in our own lives. We think it is one of the lessons of this era of history. We next hear of Jerusalem now in connection with David, and this is the appropriate map we had at this point. We hear of it particularly in 2 Samuel 5, verse 5. 2 Samuel 5, 5. And Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months in Jerusalem. He reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah. And also verses 7 through 9. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same is the city of David. And David said on that day, whoever getteth up to the gutter and smiteth the Jebusites and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain. Wherefore, they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. So David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. And David built round about from Milo and inward. Here we have a map of David's siege on Jerusalem, encircling it and taking it. Even though Jerusalem was assisted by other Philistine forces. This gutter that is referred to in 2 Samuel was a shaft dug to draw water from the Gihon spring. One of David's generals, Joab, ascended this shaft, this is looking overhead, to climb up to within the city, inside the city walls, and there presumably open the gates to David's forces. For this, Joab was rewarded with being David's captain of the army. This is the location that archaeologists have found that is the exit to that shaft that Joab would have entered into the city, and where the women drew the water from this point down to the lower shaft at Gihon. Here David made his new residence and established Jerusalem as the capital. The site was chosen for its strong defenses. Excuse me. It was within the tribal borders of David's tribe, Judah, and yet it was the nearest to most of the northern tribes. We do not know if he had in mind the location of Abraham's offering of Isaac on Moriah. Yet in so doing, he removed a foreign wedge, the Jebusites, between the north and the southern tribes, and brought a sense of unity during his reign. David added towers to the walls and greatly adorned the city. David brought the ark from Kirjath-Jearim and danced before the Lord upon its entry. David set up a tent for the ark of the covenant, for the tabernacle itself for some time before had been moved from Gibeon after the Philistine battle at Ebenezer and their destruction at Shiloh. The ark was kept at Kirjath-Jearim, and the tabernacle retained only the altar and was served by the priests. But now David brings the ark to a prominent and permanent resting place. David learned two great lessons in these events. First, obedience in the matter of carrying the ark on the shoulders of the priests, as you recall when Uzzah died. The second was when David numbered the fighting forces of Israel to determine the strength of his odds. 1 Chronicles 21:1-7. For this numbering of the tribes was a lack of faith, for God was their strength, regardless of the smallness of their numbers. The nation was plagued as punishment, and many in Israel died. David was instructed to go up to the threshing floor of Ornan, the Jebusite, and there set up an altar, depicted here at the top of the screen, Ornan's threshing floor, Jerusalem here, the city of David. Upon his offerings, the plague was halted, and David consecrated the ground for the future temple construction. Dear brethren, we would emphasize a second lesson here. Let our offerings cost us something, but also let us not forget the lesson of David's predicament. Our march towards heavenly Jerusalem will not bring victory because of numbers or imposing appearance before men, but just the opposite. Victory is based on a higher power than that which is seen. And perhaps the field of our extremity will become a place for future consecrated service, just as it was with David in this severe lesson. We pass now to the time of Solomon, David's son, who built and dedicated the temple that David was refrained from completing. These stones were found in the quarries beneath the city of Jerusalem, still incised in the rock, but not completely removed. They are some of the stones that Solomon's workmen, or probably David's workmen, originally were quarrying to cut for the temple, but were not finished being removed. We will now pass that reign of Solomon, and we come to the time of the division of the 10 and the 2 tribes. Rehoboam threatens to rule with a heavy hand, as with scorpions. Jeroboam secedes with the 10 northern tribes. And so, from henceforth, there was a division between the northern 10 tribes of Israel and the southern 2 tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Rehoboam's evil reign opens the door of retribution from God, and God used Pharaoh Shishak of Egypt as the instrument of his discipline. 2 Chronicles 12, 2 through 9. And it came to pass that in the 5th year of King Rehoboam, Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem because they had transgressed against the Lord, with 1,200 chariots, 70,000 horsemen, and the people were without number that came with him out of Egypt, the Lubims, the Sukims, the Ethiopians. And he took the fenced cities that which pertained to Judah, and came to Jerusalem. Then came Shemaiah the prophet to Rehoboam, and to the princes of Judah that were gathered together to Jerusalem, because of Shishak, and said unto them, Thus saith the Lord, ye have forsaken me, and therefore have I also left you in the hand of Shishak. Whereupon the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves, and they said to the Lord, said, The Lord is righteous. And when the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, the word of the Lord came to Shemaiah, saying, They have humbled themselves, therefore I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some deliverance. And my wrath shall not be poured upon Jerusalem by the hand of Shishak. Nevertheless, they shall be his servants, that they may know my service and the service of the kingdoms of the countries. So Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem and took away the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house and took all. He carried away also the shields of gold which Solomon had made. When Rehoboam and the people of Judah humbled themselves, they were relieved from a total overthrow. This Shishak and his campaign was mainly predatory, but not totally devastating. Though Rehoboam recorded his rule, reordered his rule to righteousness, Judah remained a tributary province to Egypt for some time. Incidentally, Brother Russell has some interesting comments on this attack in reprint 3467 and reprint 2363. The clue of the lesson might be found here in verse 8, 2 Chronicles 12, 8. That they may know my service and the service of the kingdoms of the countries, or know the service of God in contrast with the service of worldly lords and despots. The service of God is much to be preferred. The discipline was in order that they might learn how much lighter and better is the service of God than the heavy toll to idolatrous foreign rulers. These are pictures that were taken in Egypt of Shishak's campaign with the Israelites in bonds and the shields with the titles of their cities on their chest. It is a lesson that spiritual Israel has sometimes endured when courting temporal but compromising worldly relations or adulation. The tribute is usually high. The humble service of God, indeed, is much to be preferred. We now come to the time of the rise of Assyria over Syria and Babylon. Assyria here in the north, Babylon a city, the country of Syria was here, that many times plagued the nation of Israel and Judah, but now the kingdom of Assyria dominates the whole Fertile Crescent. It was a time of struggle and domination. Israel formed an alliance to rebel against Assyria, recorded in Isaiah 7, verse 2. King Ahaz of Judah was asked to join this alliance with the northern 10 tribes. He refused. And so Israel, with their affiliate Syria, invaded Judah. King Ahaz at first panicked and then appealed to the pagan Canaanite gods for help and counsel. 2 Chronicles 28, 23, and 24. Isaiah encouraged him to take heart against the enemy. Isaiah 7, 4. But instead of seeking help from God, Ahaz sought help now from the Assyrian King Tiglath-Pileser, 2 Kings 16, 7 and 8, where he says, "I am your servant and son." So instead of joining with the 10 tribes in alliance with Syria against Assyria, he seeks the support and submits himself to Assyria. Tiglath Pileser then occupied the two countries of Syria and Israel and deported large numbers to Assyria. And deports mostly the 10 tribes of the north into his own country and replaces the population of the cities in Israel with other nationalities. That became the era of the 10 lost tribes, 2 Kings 15, 25, and 1 Chronicles 5, 26. For Ahaz's alliance or allegiance to Assyria, Judah was spared. But at the cost of its independence, for heavy taxes were levied against it. Soon Ahaz died and was succeeded by Hezekiah, but it was still an era of mixed alliances. Assyria had a series of successors from Tiglath-Pileser, Shalmaneser, Sargon, and Sennacherib. All these are mentioned in Scripture. Hezekiah began an alliance now with Babylon, Phoenicia, and Egypt against Assyria. Isaiah now warns Hezekiah against trusting in such ties. Isaiah 10, 5 and 6. O Assyria, the rod of mine anger and the staff in their hand is my indignation. I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge, to take the spoil and to take the prey, and to tread them down like the mire of the streets." And also chapter 31, 1 to 3. "Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help and stay on horses and trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. Yet he also is wise and will bring evil and will not call back his words, but will arise against the house of the evildoers and against the help of them that work iniquity. Now the Egyptians are men and not God, and their horses flesh and not spirit. When the Lord shall stretch his hand, both he that helpeth shall fall, and he that is hopen shall fall down, and they all shall fail together. Sennacherib, king of Assyria, defeated Babylon, and Hezekiah now is left without any reliable supporters, even of Egypt. And so late, but finally, he takes his stand alone with the Lord, 2 Chronicles 32, 7 and 8. "Be strong and courageous, be not afraid nor dismayed, for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. "After this did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, send his servants to Jerusalem, but he himself laid siege against Lachish, and all the power with him, unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, and unto all Judah that were at Jerusalem, saying, Thus saith Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do ye trust that ye abide in the siege in Jerusalem?" Hezekiah has already taken measures to defend the city. He has built a tunnel to bring fresh water from the Gihon to Siloam, which is now within the new city boundaries, the new city walls. 2 Kings 20, 20. The blue line here represents this tunnel that Hezekiah built from the Gihon, which was a spring outside the city wall at this time, to bring fresh water to within the city walls, terminating at the Gihon. At the pool of Siloam, rather. And so the city was not only defended, but now supplied with water. Pictures of Hezekiah's tunnel and the pool of Siloam, where fresh water was drawn during this siege from Sennacherib. At this time, Sennacherib was laying siege to Lachish. It was the main stronghold, shielding Jerusalem and protecting the pass to Hebron. It was a large defended city here. And before Sennacherib felt that he could take Jerusalem, that he had to defeat the city and cut off any support from the south. It had been impregnable to previous attacks, but though the Judeans fought well, the walls nearly 20 feet thick were breached, and Lachish fell to the Assyrians. So now, distressed and demoralized, Hezekiah knew he could not hold out for long. He sent a message of allegiance now to Sennacherib, 2 Kings 18, 13. 2 Kings 18, 13 through 16. Now in the fourth year of King Hezekiah did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended, return from me, that which thou puttest on me will I bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house. At that time did Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid and gave it to the king of Assyria. He, in fact, sent his many treasuries, including these golden doors, from the temple and pillars. But Sennacherib's general, Rabshakeh, came forward and demanded total and immediate surrender of the whole city. Hezekiah knew this would mean the end of the kingdom, and now he sought spiritual guidance from Isaiah. Isaiah beseeched him not to surrender, but to rely on God alone. And so Isaiah prophesied, he shall not come into the city, nor shoot an arrow there, Isaiah 37:33, and 2 Kings 19:6-7. Hezekiah's prayer is found in 2 Kings 19:15-20, which we will pass for time now. And indeed, Sennacherib's army was smitten by a pestilence, and it retreated to the north again without completely vanquishing Jerusalem. Sennacherib recorded on this cylinder his exploits in Israel and Judah. He lists the cities and peoples taken. Then when he comes to Jerusalem, Hezekiah says, and putting the best light on his own position, 46 of Hezekiah's strong-walled towns and innumerable smaller villages I besieged and conquered. I made to come out from them 250,150 people, young and old, male and female, and counted them as the spoils of war. As for Hezekiah, the awful splendor of my lordship overwhelmed him, and all kinds of valuable treasures, as well as his daughters, concubines, male and female, musicians, he sent me later to Nineveh, my lordly city. He sent a personal messenger to deliver the tribute and make a lavish obeisance. And he continues, Hezekiah himself, like a caged bird within Jerusalem, I shut him in. This translation is from the cuneiform text of this cylinder now stored in the British Museum. Jerusalem did not fall then, and it abided under heavy tribute to Assyria. It is a lesson of trusting to false alliances, lack of faith in God alone. Nominal spiritual Israel also has suffered eternal decay for trusting in alliances and federations. Isaiah 8:9-12, where Isaiah warns against such false alliances. These alliances are all a rolling together as thorns. Hezekiah died, and his son Manasseh seemed determined to undo all the religious reforms of his father. Assyria now begins to crumble, and we'll pass quickly on. And Babylon did achieve ascendancy eventually. Soon Nebuchadnezzar was back to do for Babylon what Assyria did not finish. Not only was the city sacked and the temple destroyed, but now the people of Judah were also carried off to Babylon. And for 70 years, the people did not totally assimilate, and 30,000 or more chose to return to rebuild under the decree of Cyrus the Persian. much, much later, after the rebuilding, after the return, the temple was remodeled and embellished by Herod, the appointee of Rome. We will now pass to the specific events of the first Advent. Messiah had been set aside as a stone of stumbling and as a rock of offense, except to a few. They had not been humbled, nor trusting, nor totally obedient. Israel had not sought that which he seeketh for. And later, in 66 AD, a zealot revolution began to spread throughout Israel against the Roman yoke. In 67 to 68, Vespasian conducted various campaigns and held most of the cities except Masada here and the Herodium here and Jerusalem. In 68, Nero committed suicide. Three emperors in 1 year quickly succeeded one another. In July of AD 69, the troops proclaimed Vespasian emperor. In the spring of AD 70, he ascended the throne and sent his eldest son, Titus, to finish the campaign in Judah. The troublesome thorn in Rome's side had to once and for all be removed. Titus assembled two legions and then was joined by the 10th legion arriving from Jericho. After 6 months of isolation and starvation in the city, about August 28th, the 10th of Ab, the temple itself was entered and burned, and Jerusalem was declared off limits to all Jews. So what can we say as to the lesson of this siege? We think mainly that God's timetable of the 70 weeks had come due, and Messiah was cut off in the midst of the 70th week. Daniel 9, unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. The overspreading of abominations were poured upon the desolate. The tree of Israel had become fully dry, and God made a swift end of the typical nation. And so it remained, for an equal double of their previous favor, the fullness of Jeremiah 26:18 and Micah 3:12 was realized. Zion was plowed as a field, and Jerusalem became a heap. In 1878 to 1948, the rebirth of a nation began. Israel again inhabits the land with Jerusalem as the capital. This period saw the beginning of the fulfillment of Ezekiel 37, where bone comes to bone with sinews, flesh, and skin, and yet without breath. And yet, dear friends, the fig tree has put forth leaves. Another siege is foretold in Ezekiel 38 and Zechariah 12 and 14. Out of this siege will emerge a people fully humbled, with faith sufficient for the earthly seed and representation of the new kingdom. We refer you only to Jeremiah 32, 37 to 40 in this respect. Dear brethren, we have been considering the struggle and victory of natural Israel and the city that epitomizes their history. There are many spiritual lessons for us to learn in their past if we faithfully face our assaults in the strength of the Lord. We will be of the new Jerusalem. Isaiah 51:11, the Redeemer of the Lord shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy be upon their head. They shall obtain gladness and joy and sorrow, and mourning shall flee away. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. Revelation 21:2. So, dear brethren, who can faint with such a prospect? Urges on to faithfulness, though thy present mournful aspect seem to no cause for thankfulness. Look not at the things beside thee. Those behind thee have no worth. Let the glorious hope before thee fill thy heart with rapturous mirth. And so let us drive out the Canaanites of worldly influence from our lives. Let us consecrate the Ebenezer places of our victories and failures and deliverances as David did. Let us not be entangled with false alliances, but wholly lean on God's promises and learn the lesson of Hezekiah. And finally, let the time prophecies of returning favor to Israel assure our hearts that our deliverance draweth nigh. And so may the Lord add his blessing as you build your altars of consecrated faith on your way to Zion.
Thank you, Brother Jerry, for your ministry this morning. And at this time, we'd like to make a few announcements. First of all, the book table will close for inventory, and it'll be open for this coming intermission. If you have any purchases to make, make sure you make them during this next intermission. Also, the class directories and the telephone information sheets are now available. These can be obtained at the book table. There will be a baptismal service at our next Fourth Sunday convention. That's February 23rd. If any desire to be immersed, kindly contact our class chairman, Brother Ted Martin. We have comfort cards for Sister Barbara Jesuit, David Larson, and John Ukrainsky. These will be found in the outer lobby. Brother David thanks all the friends for their prayers and cards. He's home presently, and he's progressing. He's going to return to the hospital Tuesday for a checkup. We have a note here of thanks from the niece of Sister Louise Cole. Dear friends, I want to acknowledge with much thanks for the love and loyalty and the real friendship demonstrated for Louise Cole throughout the many years. Also want to express many thanks for the beautiful flowers and your presence at the services for Louise. Sincerely, Mrs. Helen Hofert. We have convention programs for Winnipeg. These are available at the distribution table. Sister Rose Ukrainsky passed away last Thursday. Funeral services are scheduled for Monday morning, tomorrow, at 10 o'clock, from the Matz Funeral Home, 3440 North Central Avenue, Chicago. Brother Bushless will officiate. Visitation this afternoon and evening from 2 to 9. This concludes the announcements. Then we'll ask Brother Jerry Leslie to conclude with prayer.
Gracious Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. We thank thee for the lessons of the past. Please help us to be faithful, trusting, obedient, and zealous in thy service, and bring us off victorious. We ask for thy blessing to abide with Brother John Ukrainsky. Give him the courage and strength from thy word of truth and in thy spirit. Now, Father, bless our continued fellowship this day. We ask in Jesus' precious name. Amen.